Hello, Todd Steed here. This is Studio 865. Now we'll return to our interview with Marshall Andy. This is part two of a two-part interview. So Andy is settled in Knoxville. Now we're going to find out how he became Marshall Andy.
Marshall Andy, when Charlie came back with Randall off sea, he acquired a place in North Carolina, Franklin, North Carolina, up on top of a mountain with a chairlift to it, and it was named Gold City. And I thought, you know, boy, that sounds good. And I didn't think no more about it because I was working, you know, over here at Sweetwater, living in Knoxville, but going over there. And he said, you know, you've always liked to be a cowboy, haven't you? And I said, yes. And I had horses, you know, by this time and riding and everything. He said, why don't you go over there? I said, you can even write the script for the saloon shows and all those things. So we went over in 1970. And Marshall Andy was playing a bad guy, though. I wasn't the marshal at that point. I played a guy named Mexican Joe, the meanest guy that ever lived. And I reared a horse up and rode right through the middle of town and then took on the marshal. And, of course, he killed me. And then, you know, I did that six or eight times a day. And then we did the saloon show with the music for that. So that gave me both. It gave me the cowboy and then the singing. So I could sing with the band in the saloon.
Oh, gosh, what was it like getting killed seven, eight times a day?
Well, it got the gravel in the street got kind of rough. And then the summer was over with in 1970. We came back to Knoxville, and the fair was going on, the TVA&I fair. And they hired Charlie Jr. to get a band to bring to the fair. And he picked me to come over. And they said they need someone to do the money pole at the fair. That's a kid climbing a grease pole.
Yeah, yeah.
I did that and then performed right in that little place under the tower there where the Rangers came off the tower there.
Right.
And I did that for 13 years straight. And in the middle of my second year, I walked over to Al Curtis, as you know, remember him. He was the president, of course, of PBS at that time and was in this building at that particular time. And he was the announcer out there for information at the fair. And I went over there, my hands were bleeding. And he says, this was in between shows. He says, what did you do, fall something? I said, yeah, I've already fallen three times a day. And he said, I can't believe you, this, a college man, and going through all this, and you played. I said, yeah, but I didn't have anybody to play the bad guy good as I could, I didn't think. And he said, well, you know, you need to change that. If you write the shows, don't you? I said, yeah. So, well, I left to go do my next show, and he'd been saying this. Ladies and gentlemen, over at the tower, the Ranger Tower, go out and see Marshall Andy and watch the money pole. And also, you'll hear some good music. And you go over, the next show is at 2 o'clock. Well, he said, why don't you become the good guy in this show? So I did. I switched places with the guy I had playing the marshal. And I didn't have a white hat then. I kept the black hat on. And I played that role for that day. And before I left, he said, now what should I call it? He'd been calling me Cousin Andy, Uncle Andy, and all those things for three or four days that week. And finally he said, well, why don't we call you Sheriff Andy? And I said, no. I said, there's another guy called Sheriff Andy that's doing a pretty good job.
Mayberry.
Right now, yeah. I said, I don't think I need to do that. He said, well, then, can't you play the marshal rather than the sheriff? I said, yeah. He said, well, how do you like Marshall Andy? And I said, yeah, that sounds good. So then he said, ladies and gentlemen, go over to see Marshall Andy in the Riders of the Silver Screen Band, something like that. That's how it started.
Oh, and did you like playing the good guy more than the bad guy?
At first I liked the bad guy, but then I started realizing all of my heroes, and those Saturday morning heroes that I worshipped and went to see every Saturday, my brother and I stayed all day long, Roy and Gene and Hoppy and Lash LaRue and all those people. All those were good guys, except for Lash LaRue and Hoppy Lancaster. They all wore white hats. So I liked the white hat role better, and that's really what I became. I sign off now. You remember when I signed off of my shows. This is Marshall Andy. Until next week, remember this. If you don't wear a white hat, please wear a smile so we can tell you from the bad guy.
Now, how did you go from being at the fair by the grease pole at the Ranger station to having a TV show? It doesn't seem like that would be an automatic thing.
Well, it wasn't automatic. I played the fair for about 13 years. And all of a sudden, now by this time I'm singing, though. We've got us a band put together, and I'm doing Western music and just having a ball, but I didn't have a TV show then. And performing at the fair and everywhere we could. And we had a five-piece band, and those guys could harmonize, and it was just really good for what we were doing. And it so happened, the way the thing came about, is I get a telephone call one day from a guy that was named Dan Sullivan, and he said, I'm a manager of a new station in town, Channel 43. He says, what I'd want you to do, if you could, is get me on Channel 7. Now, I've got to fill you in on that right there. During that 13-year period I was at the fair, I was working for Charlie Thomas for several of those years, say 4 or 5, and all of a sudden cable came in existence, and cable came to town, and they were looking for a marketing director, which paid really good and was great. So I interviewed for the job, and I got to be marketing director of the cable. At that time, we were called Athena Cable.
Athena Cable.
Right. Yeah. I was that marketing director. So I wasn't a manager, or a general manager, marketing director. So we had Channel 7 open. And remember, back in those days, you had to have a converter box on top of your TV to go beyond Channel 13 when you got into the mid-band. And if you didn't have a converter box, your TV stopped right there.
Right.
Well, Channel 7, everybody wanted Channel 7. Well, my people, Athena was owned by TCI out of Denver, and they told me, don't do anything with Channel 7. That's something that's valuable. Hold on to that till we can find the right person for that. So they wanted Channel 7 bad. I mean, really bad, because some of the other channels at that time, the networks were on different channels, you know. So I thought, well, maybe I've always wanted to be in TV and have my own show. Maybe he calls his boss back down in Chattanooga, Central Broadcast, and said, you know, he said, there's no way in the world this guy's going to let us have Channel 7. Said, we can forget that. But I called him back up, and I said, Dan, what about this? Have you ever thought about putting a Western television show on your new show? And how's your programming? He said, well, right now we're struggling. We're trying to find programming. I said, I got it. I said, I can come on, interview somebody, sit down and introduce the movie, and I'll ride up on a horse, and we'll do the show. He thought it was crazy. And I said, if you'll do that, I will get you on Channel 7. And he says, I'll call my bosses. He did. And they said, take it. He said, look, once we get on, unless we break an FCC rule, he can't take us off. So go ahead and take it. He won't last 2 weeks. That's what his manager said. He said, take it, put him on. Got me 2 movies. That was it. He sent them. They were both John Waynes, of all things. 2 John Wayne movies. Before John Wayne became John Wayne, the big star. This is back in his early B-Western days.
Yeah.
Lone Star Productions, they were called. So I showed those 2 back-to-back, Saturday to Saturday, and they had been in business at that time about 6 months. They had never gotten a letter or a phone call, and they got covered up with mail. So he called his boss, and he said, man, we got to get this guy some more movies. So so happened that TCI, that I worked for, they were the ones that were furnishing the film to people all over. So I had no problem getting the movies. And that's how I got on television. And but I only had an hour. So that meant I had to find a 57-minute or 56-minute movie so I'd have time to introduce the movie. So then I thought, well, we need to do more than that. If we want to do this thing the way that it did when I was a young kid, going to the movies, seeing a comedy, a serial first chapter, you know, cliffhanger, and then the main movie, and then stay in there, see the whole thing all over again. You know, I said, we need to go to that kind of format, and I need an hour and a half. And he said, I'll get it. He gave me an hour and a half, so that left me place for serial to come in, and then it left me a place for doing an interview like you and I did, and I brought on musicians and all. That was in December of 1983. Well, I made 2 weeks of that, and my daughter was killed in a car wreck 2 days after Christmas that same year, and I was paralyzed for 2 months. I couldn't do anything, and in March the 5th, I went back to work over there, and this coming March will be 34 years that I've been there. And we are, right now, the number one fundraiser for local programming in the whole PBS system.
So the show that was going to last At best, two weekends.
Yeah. That was it.
It's been on 34 years.
Yeah, soon will be 34. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just go ahead and call it 34.
34, yeah.
Yeah, it's 34.
Yeah, 34 years, yeah. And I'm still around. I've had some problems with my legs recently, but everything else is working pretty good. I can still talk and sing a little bit.
Do you just love doing it? That's what comes across when I watch it, is that you just love being there, and that's what makes people love watching it.
I think there's a connection for the people at home that tell me they sit there like I'm in their living room, and they're sitting there talking to me, you know, on the couch, and that I just feel like they did when they were younger. Some of them now, at my age now, most of the older ones that started out with me, of course, since died. But I had a young man walk up to me the other night, and it made me almost cry. He said, I'm 42 years old. And he said, you are Marshall Andy, aren't you? And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, I've been watching you. I sat on my papa's knee and watched you. He's dead now. And every time I see you, I still watch you, I think of him. So that makes you feel good.
If you had one favorite Western movie that maybe isn't as well known as some of the others, do you have like a personal favorite?
Well, I do. I'd probably have to get up into the out of the B Westerns, you know. But yeah. The B Westerns, there were just a bunch of great ones and good actors, you know. Sunset, Carson, Randolph Scott, and all those people. As the Statler brother said, whatever happened to Randolph Scott?
Yeah.
I would have to say it would be more of the A movies.
Sure.
And it would be between High Noon and Shane.
You can't go wrong with either one of those.
Yeah, they were two great productions. They were set in the West, and I got to meet Ben Johnson, who had a big part in that. And Ben, if you look in that book that's just come out on me here, you'll see Ben and I in there quite a bit. And Dub Taylor, old Cannonball, and all those people. Buck Taylor from Gunsmoke's in there.
You ever meet Chill Wills?
Never did. Never did.
Always I liked that guy.
Well, he was a great sidekick. He started out in B Westerns with who? Buck Jones.
Yep.
That's where he started. Chill Wills was good. Did you know that they brought Chill Wills here to open the theater out on Kingston Pike?
The Fox Theater.
That's exactly right.
I was there.
Were you?
I was there.
Yeah, they sure brought him out there for that. They sure did. Yeah. And that's just before we had moved here, I think. I believe. Just before.
But the whole family went down, and we met him and got the autograph and everything.
Yeah, he was a great guy. I'll tell you a little quick story if we've got time for one more.
Yeah, sure.
My wife walked through a grocery store here a few years back, and I was incapacitated with my legs, and I was sitting in the car, which I do. I wait in the car for her. She drives me, and my son now is driving me a lot. But anyway, she was walked through the place, and I must say, Catherine, for her age, and in fact, she is my wife, is still an attractive lady. Very. A man, older man, gentleman, old fellow, older than me, and that's old. He asked the girl at the cash register, said, who is that lady? Said, who is that lady that just went through here? And she said, well, that's Marshall Andy's wife. It is? Marshall Andy? I said, yes. I watch him every Saturday morning. Well, he waited for her to pick up her few things. She didn't do much shopping. And she came back to the cashier and paid. And when she got back, he got to go to the car. He walked up to her and he says, are you Marshall Andy's wife? And she said, yes, I am. Says, you reckon there's any time that I could talk to him on the telephone? And she said, why, better than that. Said, he talks to everybody. Said, he's sitting right out there in the car, right in that handicapped place out there. He is. And she said, go on out there while I get my stuff up and talk to him. Said, I was in the car listening to a CD, and I heard this knocking on the window glass. And I looked around, and there was this old man. Really old. He looked at me, and I rolled the window down. He says, you are Marshall Andy. I said, yes, sir. He says, well, I just wanted, your wife said I could come out here and talk to you, and that I just wanted to tell you one thing. I loved your television show, and I want you to know I've been watching you since I was a boy. And I thought, but what he meant, he was watching the movies since he was a boy.
Right. Yeah,
not me.
Well, Marshall Andy, such a pleasure to have you down. And you got a new book out. It's called The Knoxville Cowboy, Marshall Andy Smalls of Marshall Andy and the Riders of the Silver Screen. It's getting ready to go into its third edition.
Fourth. It's going into the fourth. Yeah.
Wow. And it looks wonderful. And you've got some nice comments on the back from Mary Costa, Margie Eisen, Johnny Majors. And the pictures alone are amazing. Are you happy with the book?
Well, I am. I'm happy. My son, Drew, handles all of that for me. He's taken that off of me, and he handles the whole thing. And let me give you a little number how you can get in touch with him. Right. If you're interested in my life story and all of my cowboy days and a lot of other things in there, and our wedding and our marriage and all that, Drew Smalls, it's Drew Smalls, and he can be found at this phone number. This is the easiest way to do it, because when we give out the other numbers through the internet and all that, no, people don't get them, or they don't have time. You got to keep saying them over and over. So if you just go by, just give them the telephone number. Of course, it's 865. The number is 458-4838. 458-4838. And just tell them that you're interested in the Knoxville Cowboy. And guess what I had the pleasure of doing yesterday for my radio show? I interviewed Jimmy Fortune, formerly with the Statler Brothers. Yeah. He took the place of Lou DeWitt, who was my close friend, and he's all in that book. But if you look at the Knoxville Cowboy, if you look at the back of the record, look at the lineup of the CDs on the back.
He's on there. Lou DeWitt's on there.
He sang the song, The Knoxville Cowboy. He surprised me one night at a banquet with that, and I nearly cried and went on about it. He wrote it. The Knoxville Cowboy never made the movies, but he kept them living in our dreams.
That's wonderful. Well, that's a nice place to finish.
Well, that suits me.
Yeah, and so what kind of hat should I wear?
Well, I would prefer you to wear a white hat, but if you didn't have one, a brown would do.
All right.
The other day, I had a lot on my mind, and I, believe it or not, I've been saying this for 34 years, and I said, if you don't wear a white hat, just remember this, folks. And I just went black and said, go out and buy one.
There you go. That's advice for everybody. If you don't have one, just go out and buy one right now. Preferably white, but brown will do. Mm-hmm. Well, Andy, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you so very, very much. I hope we can get together again sometime. I enjoyed having you on my show, too, not long ago.
Oh, it was a joy.
Hi, your Wranglers. This is Lou DeWitt, and the man I'm singing about is real. That's right. He's Marshall Andy. And Marshall Andy is the Knoxville Cowboy. Yes, sir, cowpokes. Marshall Andy is a real live hero, and he plays those great old-time Western movies that we love so much. So all you scouts, keep a sharp lookout for my buddy Marshall Andy when he comes riding your way.
A television cowboy with his hat down on his eyes walks onto the set and fills the screen. He never got to ride the movie trail he longed to ride, and now he's here to play out his big scene. He says a few choice words about the movie of the day, then pays a tribute to the cowboy king. He reads the sponsor's ad in his sincere and country way. Then Roy Rogers rides across the screen. Oh, the Knoxville Cowboy never made the movies. The Knoxville Cowboy never made the scene. The Knoxville Cowboy never made the movies. But he keeps them living in his dreams, and in our hearts they're on the TV screen. He's never rode the cowboy's trail, but he has sung his songs. He knows the cowboy's hardship very well. His hands ain't hard and calloused, but his arms are lean and strong from throwing loops and punching his own hell. He knows the smell of popcorn, and he knows the cowboy ways, and he knows all the heavies by their names. He can twirl his shooter, he can talk like Gabby Hayes, and he knows every face in every frame. Oh, the Knoxville Cowboy never made the movies. The Knoxville Cowboy never made the scene. The Knoxville Cowboy never made the movies, but he keeps them living in his dreams. And in our hearts, they're on the TV screen. One more time, it's Saturday, he'll ride his dreams again by showing Western movies on the tube, by trail herding kids and daddies down the Silver Range, and living out his dreams through Lash LaRue. Oh, the Knoxville Cowboy never made the movies. The Knoxville Cowboy never made the scene. The Knoxville Cowboy never made the movies, but he keeps them living in his dreams. And in our hearts, they're on the TV screen.